Chapter 31. We dasn't stop again at any town for days and days, kept right along down the river. We was down south in the warm weather now, and a mighty long ways from home. We begun to come to trees with Spanish moss on them, hanging down from the limbs like long gray beards. It was the first I ever see it growing, and it made the woods look solemn and dismal. So now the frauds reckoned they was out of danger, and they begun to work the villages again. First, they done a lecture on temperance, but they didn't make enough for them both to get drunk on. Then, in another village, they started a dancing school, but they didn't know no more how to dance than a kangaroo does. So the first prance they made, the general public jumped in and pranced them out of town. Another time, they tried to go at yellocution, but they didn't yellocute long till the audience got up and give them a good solid cussin' and made them skip out. They tackled missionarying and mesmerizing and doctoring and telling fortunes and a little bit of everything, but they couldn't seem to have no luck. So at last they got just about dead broke and laid around the raft as she floated along, thinking and thinking and never saying nothing, by the half a day at a time, and dreadful blue and desperate. And at last they took a change and begun to lay their heads together in the wigwam and talk low and confidential 2 or 3 hours at a time. Jim and me got uneasy. We didn't like the look of it. We judged they was studying up some kind of worse deviltry than before. We turned it over and over, and at last we made up our minds they was going to break into somebody's house or store, or was going into the counterfeit money business or something. So then we was pretty scared and made up an agreement that we wouldn't have nothing in the world to do with such actions, and if we ever got the least show, we would give them the cold shake and clear out and leave them behind. Well, early one morning, we hid the raft in a good safe place about 2 miles below a little bit of a shabby village named Pikesville, and the king, he went ashore and told us all to stay behind whilst he went up to town and smelt around to see if anybody had got any wind of the royal nonsuch there yet. "House to rob, you mean," says I to myself, "and when you get through robbing it, you'll come back here and wonder what's become of me and Jim and the raft, and you'll have to take it out in wondering." And he said if he weren't back by midday, the Duke and me would know it was all right and we was to come along. So we stayed where we was. The Duke, he fretted and sweated around and was in a mighty sour way. He scolded us for everything, and we couldn't seem to do nothing right. He found fault with every little thing. Something was a-brewing sure. I was good and glad when midday come and no king. We could have a change anyway, and maybe a chance for the change on top of it. So me and the Duke went up to the village and hunted around there for the king, and by and by we found him in the back room of a little low doggery, very tight, and a lot of loafers bully-ragging him for sport, and he a-cussin' and threatening with all his might, and so tight he couldn't walk and couldn't do nothing to them. The Duke, he began to abuse him for an old fool, and the king begun to sass back, and the minute they was fairly at it, I lit out and shook the reefs out of my hind legs and spun down the river road like a deer, for I see our chance. And I made up my mind that it'd be a long day before they ever see me and Jim again. I got down there all out of breath, but loaded up with joy, and sung out, "Set her loose, Jim, we're all right now." But there warn't no answer, and nobody come out of the wigwam. Jim was gone. I set up a shout, and then another one, and run this way and that in the woods, whooping and screeching. But it warn't no use, old Jim was gone. Then I sat down and cried. I couldn't help it. But I couldn't sit still long. Pretty soon I went out on the road, trying to think what I better do, and I run across a boy walking, and asked him if he'd seen a strange nigger dressed so-and-so, and he says, "Yes." "Whereabouts?" says I.
"Down to Silas Phelps's place, 2 miles below here. He's a runaway nigger, and they've got him. Was you looking for him?"
"You bet I ain't. I run across him in the woods about an hour or two ago, and he said if I hollered, he'd cut my livers out, and told me to lay down and stay where I was, and I'd done it. Been there ever since, afeard to come out."
"Well," he says, "you needn't be afeard no more, because they got him. He run off from down south somers."
"It's a good job they got him."
"Well, I reckon. There's $200 reward on him. It's like picking up money out in the road."
"Yes, it is, and I could have had it if I'd been big enough. I see him first." "Who nailed him?"
"It was an old fella, a stranger, and he sold out his chance in him for $40 because he's got to go up the river and can't wait."
"Think of that now. You bet I'd wait if it was 7 year." "That's me every time," says I.
But maybe his chance ain't worth no more'n that if he'll sell it so cheap. Maybe there's something ain't straight about it. But it is, though, straight as a string. I see the handbill myself. It tells all about him to a dot, paints him like a picture and tells the plantation he's from, below New Orleans. No siree, Bob. There ain't no trouble about that speculation, you betcha. Say, give me a chaw of tobacker, won't you? I didn't have none, so he left. I went to the raft and sat down in the wigwam to think. But I couldn't come to nothing. I thought till I wore my head sore, but I couldn't see no way out of the trouble. After all this long journey, and after all we'd done for them scoundrels, here it was all come to nothing. Everything all busted up and ruined, because they could have the heart to serve Jim such a trick as that, and make him a slave again all his life, and among strangers, too, for 40 dirty dollars. Once I said to myself it'd be 1,000 times better for Jim to be a slave at home, where his family was, as long as he'd got to be a slave. So I'd better write a letter to Tom Sawyer and tell him to tell Miss Watson where he was. But soon I give up that notion for two things. She'd be mad and disgusted at his rascality and ungratefulness for leaving her, and so she'd sell him straight down the river again. And if she didn't, everybody naturally despises an ungrateful nigger, and they'd make Jim feel it all the time, and so he'd feel ornery and disgraced. And then think of me. It'd get all around that Huck Finn helped a nigger to get his freedom. And if I was to ever see anybody from that town again, I'd be ready to get down and lick his boots for shame. That's just the way. A person does a low-down thing, and then he don't want to take no consequences of it. Thinks as long as he can hide it, it ain't no disgrace. That was my fix exactly. The more I studied about this, the more my conscience went to grinding me, and the more wicked and low-down and ornery I got to feeling. And at last, when it hit me all of a sudden that here was the plain hand of Providence slapping me in the face and letting me know my wickedness was being watched all the time from up there in heaven, whilst I was stealing a poor old woman's nigger that had never done me no harm, and now was showing me there's one that's always on the lookout and ain't a-going to allow no such miserable doings to go only just so fur and no further, I most dropped in my tracks, I was so scared. Well, I tried the best I could to kind of soften it up somehow for myself by saying I was brung up wicked, and so I warn't so much to blame. But something inside of me kept saying, there was a Sunday school, you could have gone to it. And if you'd have done it, they'd have learnt you there that people that acts as I'd been acting about that nigger goes to everlasting fire. It made me shiver, and I about made up my mind to pray and see if I couldn't try to quit being the kind of a boy I was and be better. So I kneeled down. But the words wouldn't come. Why wouldn't they? It warn't no use to try and hide it from him, nor from me neither. I knowed very well why they wouldn't come. It was because my heart warn't right. It was because I warn't square. It was because I was playing double. I was letting on to give up sin, but away inside of me I was holding on to the biggest one of all. I was trying to make my mouth say I would do the right thing and the clean thing and go and write to that nigger's owner and tell where he was. But deep down in me, I knowed it was a lie. And he knowed it. You can't pray a lie. I found that out. So I was full of trouble, full as I could be, and didn't know what to do. At last I had an idea, and I says, I'll go and write the letter, and then see if I can pray. Why, it was astonishing the way I felt as light as a feather right straight off, and my troubles all gone. So I got a piece of paper and a pencil, all glad and excited, and sat down and wrote, Miss Watson, your runaway nigger Jim is down here 2 mile below Pikesville, and Mr. Phelps has got him, and he will give him up for the reward if you send. Huck Finn. I felt good and all washed clean of sin for the first time I'd ever felt so in my life, and I knowed I could pray now. But I didn't do it straight off, but laid the paper down and sat there thinking how good it was all this happened so, and how near I come to being lost and going to hell, and went on thinking, and got to thinking over our trip down the river. And I see Jim before me all the time in the day and in the night time, sometimes moonlight, sometimes storms, and we a-floating along, talking and singing and laughing. But somehow I couldn't seem to strike no places to harden me against him, but only the other kind. I'd see him standing my watch on top of his'n, instead of calling me so I could go on sleeping, and see him how glad he was when I come back out of the fog. and when I come to him again in the swamp up there where the feud was, and such like times. And would always call me honey and pet me and do everything he could think of for me, and how good he always was. And at last I struck the time I saved him by telling the men we had smallpox aboard, and he was so grateful, and said I was the best friend old Jim ever had in the world, and the only one he's got now. And then I happened to look around and see that paper.